Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the, we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome to Inside Politics. I'm Abby Phillip in Washington. John King is off today. Israel shuts down. Schools, shops, the airport, embassies, even McDonald's, all closed as demonstrators swarmed the streets to protest a dramatic government overhaul.
It's called checks and balances.
Well, there is no checks and balances.
Yes, but it's the only check and balance in Israel to the government.
No, it's not.
Plus, all about him. Donald Trump makes his 2024 message all about his legal troubles while warning of dark forces trying to stop him.
And 2024 is the final battle. That's going to be the big one. Either the deep state destroys America or we destroy the deep state. They're not coming after me. They're coming after you, and I'm just standing in their way.
And twisters terrorize the South, steamrolling through towns, leaving nothing but piles of bricks and heartbreak.
You say you lived right here. What's this like to look at all of this?
Never seen anything like it, man. It could be. I wish it was all a dream.
Right now, we begin with word of a deal to pull Israel back from a full-blown crisis. A far-right power player says that there is an agreement to delay changing the DNA of the Israeli government. And it happens only after there have been weeks of protests swallowing the entire country, hundreds of thousands standing shoulder to shoulder in the streets, everything from stores, hospitals, restaurants, all stopped in their tracks. Moments ago, we just saw the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the floor of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. CNN is covering this story from the middle of the protests on the ground and right here in Washington. But we start first in Jerusalem, where CNN's Hadas Gold is. So Hadas, can you tell us about what we know about this agreement to postpone that judicial overhaul?
Well, Abby, yeah, I mean, protests have been going on for more than 12 weeks. Hundreds of thousands have come to the streets, but they've really escalated in the last 24 hours or so. And that's because Benjamin Netanyahu fired his own defense minister for speaking out against these reforms, calling for a freeze on Saturday night. He was fired 24 hours later. That sparked new protests in the streets overnight. Some of them got fiery, some of them got quite angry and even a little bit violent. And then this morning, something historic, the biggest general strike Israel has ever seen. As you noted, essentially, the entire country came to a screeching halt. Even the airport, airplanes were not taking off. Even Israel's biggest ports were on strike as a result of this general strike. The country has never seen something like this, as big as this general strike. And instead, people came to the streets flooding, especially here in Jerusalem, to protest against this judicial overhaul, to protest against the defense minister's firing. Now, we had not heard from Benjamin Netanyahu today yet, only a tweet asking for demonstrators on both the right and the left to be civil, to be calm. But just in the last hour, so we actually heard from Itamar Ben-Gvir's party. Itamar Ben-Gvir is the Minister of National Security. He is considered one of the most right-wing politicians in the Israeli government, if not the most right-wing politician in the Israeli government. His party came out with a statement saying that a deal had been reached, that the government will be given an extension until the next parliamentary session that starts at the end of April to get the reform through with negotiations, so that the reforms will still happen, but they will happen just a little bit later with an extension. This is the halt. This is the freeze that the defense minister had actually called for, because the defense minister said he himself supports these reforms. But it's really interesting, Abby, we have not yet heard from the prime minister himself. This is coming from the Minister of National Security. And the way things go here, Abby, I would say we should wait and hear from the prime minister himself before we understand exactly what's happening here. But that's the latest on the ground. Also, what's happening is actually that the right wing is now coming up and out in support of these reforms. Most of the protesters that have been walking by me in the last hour or so, these are people who are in favor of Benjamin Netanyahu. They are in favor of these reforms. And there is a big concern that they are going to clash with the anti-reform protesters on the street tonight, especially as the sun sets. Abby?
You make such a critical point that we do need to hear from the Israeli prime minister to know where this goes from here. Hadass Gold, thank you very much. And now over to the White House, where CNN's MJ Lee is. MJ, this is a critical, tumultuous moment for the United States' closest ally in the Middle East. And there are eyes now on the Biden White House. What are you learning about the pressure that they are facing to respond more forcefully to this proposal by the Israeli prime minister?
Well, Abby, we've not heard directly from President Biden on these developments, which is worth noting, given the scale of the unrest that we are seeing in Israel. And also given, as you said, what a big and close ally Israel is to the United States. What we have gotten so far is a paper statement from the White House overnight expressing deep concern about these developments. The NSC saying that the importance of checks and balances is really at play here. And they also called on Israeli leaders to get to a compromise as quickly as possible. We can't look at this in a vacuum. We have to sort of acknowledge here the decades-long relationship between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu that is playing into all of this. We have seen him, of course, watching the prime minister in recent years lose his power, then be reelected, now facing a criminal trial as well, a corruption trial, I should say. And he is trying to overhaul a judicial system that critics say are meant to sort of help himself politically. And we do know that the president has come under a lot of pressure domestically, including from Jewish leaders and Jewish groups that have said, look, you need to speak out on this more forcefully. Now, we do know that the last time that the two leaders spoke that we know about was last weekend on Sunday, and that the president did express some of these concerns directly to the prime minister. What we don't know yet is whether there is going to be a call again between the two leaders. It is likely that that could happen in the coming days. But obviously, whenever that conversation next takes place, there are going to be a lot of sensitive dynamics for President Biden to address in that conversation, Abby.
That's absolutely right. And this has been quite the balancing act. MJ Lee, thank you. And joining me now, Yaakov Katz, the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. Thank you for joining us. This is a moment where we are still waiting, perhaps, to hear from Benjamin Netanyahu. What is your reaction to the news that this could be postponed, not scrapped altogether, but a judicial overhaul postponed perhaps for a month or two? Does this then just set Israel up to resume these clashes later in the spring or in the summer?
I think, Abby, there's no doubt that the protesters will tell you that they're not going to stop, right? They're going to keep going. They will not stop until there is a complete stop to the legislation and the reforms that have been taking over Israel and have basically ruptured and split and divided this country in an unprecedented way, right? You have hundreds of thousands of Israelis who are taking to the streets on a weekly basis and are fighting for democracy as they see it. The prime minister has until now defied and ignored all calls to stop, including, as Hadass mentioned, his own defense minister, people in his own security cabinet, the man who's supposed to be the closest to him on the issues that matter the most, Israel's safety and security. Even him, he just sacked, right, fired without even blinking within hours of his call to stop the legislation. Netanyahu seems to still be doubling down to go forward. So this is just a delay tactic. It doesn't seem like it's yet the win that the protesters were looking for.
And as you were speaking, we were just showing images right as we are talking now. There are protests happening in the streets, and a lot of the protesters are pro-Netanyahu protesters on the streets. Those live pictures there on your screen. I want to play very quickly. Netanyahu was asked about this and about his moves on the judiciary. Here's his response to Piers Morgan on Sunday.
Right now, you have a situation where 15 unelected members of the Supreme Court effectively govern Israel. They can decide things that affect our military, our economy, our foreign relations, our battle with terrorism. Is that right? Is that democratic? No, it's not democratic. You want to correct it. You don't say that those other democracies are somehow tainted, are somehow not democratic because they have a better balance of power.
But that's his spin on it, Yaakov. What does it actually do? And why is it prompting not just concerns about the judiciary, but also now national security concerns for Israel?
Well, I mean, his spin on it is, of course, how he can continue to move ahead with this legislation. But what he ultimately wants to do is, okay, those 15 Supreme Court justices, he's right, are not elected by the people. But there is meant to be a separation of powers. There's meant to be checks and balances in a democracy. You know that well, Abby, in the United States and other democracies around the world. What they effectively want to do is to basically politicize the court in a way that it won't just be the legislative branch, the executive branch, but also the judicial branch that will be controlled by the coalition. So it's not the end of democracy, in my view, but it is a slip from a liberal democracy, that what Israel has been until now, to a potential authoritarian democracy. It would mean that you elect an official, that person, that prime minister, will have control over all branches, all powers, all government institutions. And, you know, the ultimate thing that's happening here, this outpour, this cry for help and for the democracy to be preserved, is a way for people to stand up and continue their service to the country. You mentioned the national security issues. Yeah. Well, Israelis, as you know, Abby, serve a compulsory military service. Most men and women serve their country for 3 years or 2 years. A lot of these protesters were people who came from the ranks of Israel's reserves. The military, the serving military, is small. This country relies heavily on reservists.
Right.
And if we don't have reservists, how will we be able to meet the challenges that we face along our borders, whether it's Hezbollah in the north, Hamas in the south, or Iran, which continues with its pursuit of a nuclear weapon? So if the military starts to fall apart, that could be extremely dangerous to the state of
and
Israel.
And Yaakov, we only have a second left, but just as it's the evening there in Tel Aviv, and you're seeing so many protesters, counter-protesters on the street, are you concerned about the volatility on the streets in the coming hours?
I am very concerned. You're starting to see a right-wing protest that's taking place. There could be a clash. We have to hope that the police can keep this in order, because the last thing we want is blood to be shed on the streets of Israel over this democratic argument that's taking place. That should not happen, and I hope it doesn't.
Thank you for all of that. Yaakov Katz, the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And up next for us, we believe the grand jury discussing the Stormy Daniels case is now back in action today. We'll have an update on that as Donald Trump continues to rail against the district attorney. We have some breaking news now out of Nashville, Tennessee. Police say a shooter is dead after a confrontation with police at a school. CNN's Amra Walker is tracking the latest developments in this story. Amra, what do we know right now? Anything about the victims at all?
We don't know anything about the victims right now. What we do know is a little bit about this event that took place. We are going with what Metro Nashville police have just tweeted. An active shooter event, that is what they are calling it. This happened at Covenant School. I'll read you that tweet that was just tweeted out 14 minutes ago. An active shooter event has taken place at Covenant School, Covenant Presbyterian Church on Burton Hills Drive. The shooter was engaged by Metro Nashville Police and is dead. Student reunification with parents at Woodmont Baptist Church is happening, 2100 Woodmont Boulevard. So right now, all we know is that the shooter is dead. Apparently, he engaged with police and he apparently was killed by police as a result. We don't know if there are victims in this, if students were injured, but we do know that Covenant School, it is a private Christian school in Nashville for students in preschool to sixth grade. So you can understand what age range may have been impacted. But again, as you saw in that tweet, that police are working to unify parents with their students right now, again, at Woodmont Baptist Church, just a few blocks away from that school. So Abby will stay on top of this. We're making calls to get more information. But right now, that shooter, we are being told, is dead. Back to you.
And Amra, I know that there is very little information in this moment, but do we have any sense of the timing here when this incident may have occurred?
Right now, that is not known at this time. We just started getting some information about it through Twitter. And then, of course, this was confirmed through Metro Nashville Police. So we're making some calls right now. And once we get those details, Abby, we will definitely get that to you.
All right. Amber Walker, thank you very much. And we'll continue to hope that anyone who may have been involved in this incident is safe in this moment. But right now, on to New York and the Manhattan grand jury investigating Donald Trump's alleged role in a hush money scheme. Jurors meet again today as they consider potential indictment of the former president. Over the weekend, Trump used the opportunity to ramp up attacks against the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg at his campaign rally in Waco, Texas. CNN's Kara Scannell is joining me now from New York. So, Kara, what are we expecting today from the grand jury?
Well, Abby, as you said, the grand jury is expected to meet this afternoon, and it's possible that they will hear from one witness. All of this is taking place behind closed doors, and it's all secret, and that's also exactly how you want it to be. These investigations are confidential. But in the void, where we're waiting for any details, any information, the former president is filling it by unleashing these verbal attacks against the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, over the weekend, calling him a degenerate psychopath. Now, this statement was condemned by nearly 200 former federal prosecutors who say it's essential in a democracy to have independent prosecution. And this also comes as the three powerful chairmen of the House, three powerful chairmen of the House committees led by Republicans are continuing to put pressure on Bragg, saying they want him to come in and testify, and saying that they may even consider legislation that would stop a local or state prosecutor from investigating a current or former president. That would also affect the case out of Fulton County, Georgia, down the road, if something like that in the future. But all, you know, as we're waiting for a decision on whether D.A. Bragg will move forward to seek an indictment. Meanwhile, the grand jury will be meeting behind me and will be hard at work. Abby?
All right, Kara Scannell, thank you for that update. And joining me now is CNN's Manu Raju, Sungmin Kim of the Associated Press, Margaret Talev of Axios, and CNN's legal analyst, Carrie Cordero. Thanks, all of you, for being here. So I want to start with this weekend, an extraordinary weekend, Trump really kicking off his campaign for 2024, but doing so by focusing on the issue of this investigation. Take a listen.
The new weapon being used by out-of-control, unhinged Democrats to cheat on election is criminally investigating a candidate. Prosecutorial misconduct is their new tool, and they are willing to use it at levels never seen before in our country.
So no shock, of course, that Trump is railing against people investigating him. But in this moment, it seems he's going after the idea of the judiciary itself.
Right, right. And you have many of his allies in Congress helping him in that effort. And what's been really remarkable about this potential indictment against the former president is just how much Republicans in Congress have been willing to use the levers of federal government to go after this, the legal process, which theoretically they should kind of be independent from. And I thought it was really remarkable when House Oversight Chairman Jamie Comer was asked about the issue with Jake Tapper yesterday on CNN, and he was grilled repeatedly. You know, this seems to be a state issue. What authority, what interest does the Congress have in investigating? And he kind of just said, you know, he's clearly doing this for political gain. That's why we want the DA to come in and talk to us. But it doesn't seem like they have too much of a ground to really talk to him just yet. And that's why you're seeing so much of the backlash from the prosecutors from elsewhere.
Well, let's play James Comer yesterday on State of the Union talking about what exactly Sumner was just referring to.
Local investigation. This is a federal investigation. He's investigating a presidential candidate, not to mention former president of the United States, for a federal election crime. We believe tax dollars would be better spent prosecuting local criminals. That's what a DA is supposed to do.
So, first of all, the issue of whether or not this is a state crime, I mean, shouldn't a judge decide that, not a member of Congress? And secondly, this idea that because Trump is a candidate, that it is on its face inappropriate to investigate him. Your response?
Well, so first of all, the reason he's mentioning tax dollars there is because one of the arguments that the congressional chairmen are making in their letter back to the New York DA to try to get him to provide information about this case is they are raising what they would call a legislative purpose. And so they are sort of threatening in the letter to evaluate whether they want to withhold federal funds from law enforcement. So what they're trying to do is they're trying. So that's why he's talking about that particular issue there. Look, there's the political side of this and there's the legal side of this. With respect to the letters from the oversight chairman, they are trying to make a constitutional argument for why their committees should have oversight of this particular issue. The New York DA has a strong argument that while this case is pending, it would be inappropriate for a prosecutor to provide information about a pending case. That particular issue could potentially be litigated between the local authorities and Congress if they really want to go down the path of litigating these constitutional issues. But that's a different type of engagement than what we're seeing with respect to the threats from the former president, sort of the environment of a threatening atmosphere, which is what the prosecutors are
And again, at some point, a judge is going to sort that out, and it's not going to be decided single-handedly by James Comer. I want to move on, though, to the politics again. We got a chance to talk to Trump, some of Trump's supporters at his rally this weekend. Take a listen.
If 100 million people are going to vote for him, if they do indict him, you're going to get 120 million people voting for him. Because they're just, you know, you can't take an honest man down.
Shoo-in. 100%. If they do that, he'll be a shoo-in.
They've been going after him since the beginning. They haven't stopped, and they're not going to stop. And this is where we have to stand up and fight. And we have to, you know, this is our vote. It's not the government's vote.
Fair to say, I don't think anyone knows his supporters better than Trump himself, and that's why he's going down this road. But the bigger question for Republicans is, beyond the rally-goers, how does this really land?
Right. I mean, this is not like an unbiased sample of 1,000 U.S. adults. It's people outside of a Trump rally. Right now, the former president is playing for the early primary fight. He is not playing a general election strategy. And he's got one big unannounced opponent. It's Ron DeSantis. And Donald Trump is using this moment to try to consolidate fundraising, support, momentum, friendships inside the base and test the loyalties of his friends in Congress. And right now it's working. We've spent a week talking about an indictment that hasn't actually come. And every minute that coverage lasts is coverage that he wants for primary campaigning purposes. Now, a lot of Republicans worried about a general election, though, right?
Certainly. Yeah. Look, he can whip up a frenzy right now because we don't have any evidence. We don't know exactly what the prosecutors are going to say. When the evidence comes out, we'll see how that messaging changes among Republicans, maybe more persuadable Republicans, maybe his Republican opponents. And also, what about all the other major legal issues he has on the federal level, to criminal investigations, as well as this local investigation in Georgia? All of which could add to new problems for him. The question will be, what does his Republican opponents do in the primary? Do they seize on any of those new allegations that come out, or do they side with Trump and say that he's being treated unfairly?
I mean, and so far they've sided with Trump and said he's been treated unfairly. So we'll see how that message works. But stand by for us. We have breaking news. Police say an active shooter is dead after a confrontation with cops at a Nashville pre-K and elementary school. We'll have much more on that story after a quick break. And more from our breaking news out of Nashville. A shooting at a pre-K and elementary school this morning. Police say the shooter is dead. This happened at the Covenant School, a parochial school in Nashville. We're learning also that there are multiple patients, and the scene is still an active one. CNN's Amra Walker is getting updates on this breaking news story. Amra, what do we know this hour?
Yeah, Abby, that's the key here, right? This is still a developing story. It's an active scene. There was a tweet from the Nashville Fire Department that said that they have multiple patients. We don't know what that means. We don't know the number of patients. We don't know the age range of these patients, although judging from the type of school, this being a preschool through sixth grade, I guess the patients could be as young as 3 to 4 years old, as old as 11 to 12 years old. We don't know the extent of the injuries of these quote-unquote patients. We don't know if staff or any of the teachers may be patients at this point. But look, this is obviously a huge nightmare and a terrifying scene for parents, including you and me, Abby. You know, you and I are both parents. This is something that goes through our minds, every day, the safety of our children when they're dropped off at school. And now we're talking about another school shooting, this one in Nashville, Tennessee. This is a private Christian school called the Covenant School. You asked me a few minutes ago the timing of the shooting. It looks like this happened later in the morning, judging from the tweets from Nashville Fire Department. They tweeted this about an hour ago. And keep in mind, Nashville is on Central Time. So it happened at least around 10 o'clock or so. But again, what we know is that there was an active shooter event. That is how the Nashville Fire Department, the Nashville Police Department is characterizing this. Police saying that the shooter is dead after the shooter engaged with police. We have no more information on the shooter, if this was a student or had any ties to the school. But again, you are looking at live pictures there on the scene in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're talking about an elementary school where little children, preschool-aged children, attend this school. 3, maybe 4 years old, Abby. But this is what we know. Multiple patients being treated, according to Nashville Fire. And look, once we get more information, we'll get it to you. But right now, as you see, it is an active scene, Abby.
And parents are being told where to go to reunify with their children. But this is, of course, a nightmare for all parents and a nightmare for this nation once again. Amber Walker, thank you for that. Let's bring in now CNN law enforcement analyst Chief Charles Ramsey, who's on the phone for us. Chief Ramsey, in this moment, they are describing this as an active scene. Although the shooter is known to be, confirmed to be dead, what does that mean about what is happening at that school right now?
Well, I mean, another unbelievable tragedy. Right now, they can't take anything for granted. The shooter is deceased. However, they still have to conduct a thorough search of the building to make sure they don't have any more individuals who are with the shooter or any more victims. So that has to continue. The process now is identifying the shooter. Once they do that, if they haven't already, they'll be executing search warrants. They'll be looking at social media. They'll be trying to find as much out about this individual as possible. You mentioned, Abby, that there's a reunification center set up for parents. This is a nightmare for anyone. I mean, I've got grandkids, so, you know, I feel the same way. Your heart kind of sinks whenever you hear something like this happen. But the reality is they've got a lot of moving parts right now trying to, you know, make sure they can reunify with parents, parents going to the hospital. So they have to be able to deal with that as well. And at the same time, the investigation is just getting underway. They're still searching the location, and now they're trying to really identify the individual who's responsible and then executing warrants and so forth to find out as much as they can. It's just another one more tragedy that we have to deal with and talk about now.
Absolutely. And let's bring in now former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who is with us. Andrew, this is, as we've been saying, quite a nightmare, but something that has become very familiar. Schools as targets, elementary schools with the most defenseless of potential victims, children as young as 3 years old. What goes through your mind to hear that we are dealing with yet another active shooter situation at an elementary school in this country?
Yeah, well, Abby, I mean, you phrased it perfectly. Something that we would have considered just to be an aberration 20, 30 years ago is now kind of an aspect of American life that all parents have to consider when they send their kids off to school every day. This can happen really anywhere around the country. We've seen it all over the place in all kinds of different circumstances, in schools and places of worship and hospitals, anything you can imagine. And this is just another chapter in that unfolding drama of gun violence in America. I think right now my heart goes out to the folks who are responding to that scene. I understand how devastating that can be, but they are laser focused on trying to take care of the folks who have been, certainly the folks who have been wounded, might be hurt, need medical attention, all those children that are going to need care and support, first and foremost from their families, but from professionals as well today and in the days that follow. And it is still a very much an active crime scene. So they're trying to understand the full scope of the victims they have, to ensure there are no more threats on the premises. Sounds like that's been resolved. But as the chief said, you have to do a really thorough search to be absolutely sure that there's nothing there that could cause anyone any harm. Right. So it's a lot that they're dealing with right now.
And we are also learning that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is now on the scene assisting in this investigation. What would their role be in this moment at this point?
Well, they can, you know, from a basic perspective, they can bring some additional investigative resources to the scene. That is always a help. You see that from the federal partners in any community where this happens. Typically, there's an FBI response as well. But with their specialized capability of running gun traces, ultimately, probably not their first priority right this minute, but ultimately, the locals will rely on the ATF to tell them about the firearm that was used. How did that end up in the hands of the person who has it? Where did it come from? Was it legally purchased? All those questions that we have as observers grievers, really, of these events to understand as the days unfold more about this person who brought a weapon into the school today and unleashed this violence. Why did they do it? Where did they come from? What motivated them? Because that sort of information helps us better understand how this threat is playing out across the country.
There's so much more for us to learn about what is happening in this situation. More on this breaking news out of Nashville. Right now, we know that there are multiple patients and a shooter is dead after a confrontation with police. This is happening at a Nashville pre-K and elementary school. Stay with us. We'll have much more on this after the break. Right now, there is an active shooter scene in Nashville's Covenant School. Police say that the shooter is dead after a confrontation with police, but we are also now learning that there are multiple patients. These are the very early moments. Not a lot of information here, but CNN's Amory Walker is standing by for us. We also have Chief Charles Ramsey and former FBI Deputy Director Andy McCabe all standing by. Let's start with you, Amra. Again, we don't have a lot of concrete information about what is happening in this scene, but so far we do know that there have been multiple injuries reported by law enforcement over there.
Yeah, Abby, it's another tragic day in America where our school children, elementary-aged school children, have been forever changed by what is being described as an active shooter event by Metro Nashville Police. We know this happened at the Covenant School, which is a private Christian school for pre-K through sixth graders. So we're talking about children who are only 4 years old to maybe about 12 years old. And you said that there are multiple patients. This is according to the Nashville Fire Department. They tweeted this about over an hour ago. We don't know the extent of injuries, and God forbid, we don't know if any have died. We don't know the exact number of patients that Nashville Fire Department are treating or had to take to the hospital. We don't know the ages of these children, or perhaps staff or faculty at the school. All we know is that there are victims. We do know, as you said, the shooter is dead, apparently after engaging with police. Perhaps there was some kind of shootout. But look, you know, there are so many questions that are going to be, you know, follow this, right? I mean, were the children targeted? Was this random? Who is a shooter? Does a shooter have ties to the school? Right now, the most important thing is getting answers for the parents who are reliving a trauma that so many parents have gone through in this country. Another school shooting. Right now, law enforcement, Nashville police, are saying the reunification area is going to be happening at the Woodmont Baptist Church. The location is 2100 Woodmont Boulevard. That is where parents can go right now to hopefully reunify with their children and get more information. Abby, we don't have much more information than that right now.
That's
right. We're making calls.
And as you continue your reporting, we'll wait to learn more. But it can't be emphasized enough what you are saying, that this is not just a nightmare for those families in Nashville, but for this entire country. So many people watching right now saying, not again, not another elementary school.
Right.
But on that point, Chief Ramsey, I want to ask you about that, because this is a parochial school, a private Christian school in a church It's a very small school, only about 200 students, young kids, elementary school age. And when we've talked over the years about how schools and communities protect themselves against this unfortunate occurrence happening to them, how does that impact a school like this elementary school, Covenant School, that is not a public school? What protocols are they subject to the same kinds of protocols as, say, a public school might be?
Well, I mean, every school is different, but certainly, I mean, it's just an unfortunate reality now where you have to have some level of security in place at all these schools, including apparently pre-K. I mean, this is just unbelievable what we're talking about here, and we're talking about it on a regular basis. I mean, you know, I do some work with the United States Conference of Mayors, and there's a lot of discussion around what to do with active shooters, whether it's a school or wherever it might be. There's actually a playbook, for lack of a better word, that is used by mayors, by police chiefs, and others on what to do when you're confronted with something like this. I mean, think about that. That is absolutely insane that we have to even have this discussion and that people have to be prepared at the level that they have to be prepared to deal with it, because it just continues to happen and it will happen again. The only question is when and where. It's particularly tragic, obviously, if you're talking about very young children. I mean, pre-K up to sixth grade. But even a small school, 200 students, would need to have, you know, some kind of security. I mean, but even then, you know, is that enough to really stop what's going on right now? It's just not an easy fix to for what we're seeing happen in our country, and it just doesn't seem to be the kind of action that needs to take place in order to at least take steps to try to minimize the opportunity for people to do this sort of thing.
Yeah, in recent years, this school has had between 195 and about 210 students. And what you're talking about there, the fact that this has become, it seems, more frequent in recent years, Andy McCabe, I wonder about the contagion effect here, if there is any in your mind. When we see a Sandy Hook happen, we see a Uvalde happen, and you have a shooter, whoever this person is, picking a target, are we seeing a contagion effect where the targets that they are choosing are schools with the youngest kids?
You know, that's a great question, Abby. It's one that's hard to answer because we don't have the data upon which to make a really hard conclusion about that. But the observations are undeniable, right? It's been over 10 years since Sandy Hook, almost a year since Uvalde. That's hard to believe. Here in Virginia, we had a 6-year-old shot as teacher in a school, very young children, in January. So it does seem that on some level, the way that this has become so common, we've normalized the most horrific acts of violence that you could have even imagined 20, 30 years ago. Now we just understand that, you know, schools are frequent targets of gun violence. Children are frequent targets at school of gun violence. And we're starting to leap to, well, how do we protect the schools? How do we better secure them? Those are all necessary conversations to have. But like, to step back and say, like, why are we here? How come this keeps happening? It wasn't an aberration. We know from observing past experiences, it will happen again. You and I will be on this, on these airways talking about a mass shooting at a school. Who knows? Maybe later this week, maybe a month from now, who knows? But we'll be doing it again at some point. It's impossible to perfectly train 6- and 7-year-olds how to handle themselves in the face of an armed attacker. I mean, so, and do we want to turn our schools into completely hardened targets like prisons, essentially? I don't think anybody wants any of that, but yet here we are facing potentially more children shot and killed at school during a normal school day. It's just until we have the political will to address the underlying issues here, including the proliferation of guns, the availability of guns, we have to just be prepared to have these conversations again and again, I guess.
You're looking at images right now of the scene outside of the Covenant School in Nashville, where we are following an active shooter situation. The shooter in this situation is now dead after a confrontation with police, but they are describing this as an active scene. And as you can see, a lot of activity on the ground there as parents are in this moment seeking to be reunified with their kids. There is an active investigation underway. And we are also learning just moments ago, the Nashville police have just tweeted that they will be providing an update in this case in about 15 to 20 minutes from now. We will bring that to you when it happens. And as we learn more information about this, I want to go back, though, to Charles Ramsey on what Andy McCabe was just talking about. It's impossible to not put this situation in the context of all the other cases that we've had of violence inside of schools. And I wonder, as you look at what has happened since the Uvalde tragedy, that massacre involving so many students, and the conversations that came after that, do you see anything that schools need to be doing in this moment, maybe not to make themselves hard targets, but to protect their students when there's perhaps nothing else that they can do?
Well, I mean, obviously, every school should take a look at their current security situation, you know, cameras, making sure doors are locked, all those kinds of things that need to happen. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of schools that'll be reassessing their security. But there's one thing I want to just mention because, you know, and that is the mental health aspect of all this. It's not just the families of the children that are directly involved in this sort of thing. I mean, think about it. When I was a kid coming up, we had fire drills. Now they have fire drills and active shooter drills. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And I remember, and of course I'm a lot older than you are, but in the 50s and 60s, we had drills in case there was a nuclear war where you had to get under your desk and that sort of thing as if that would have protected you. But I remember even then, you know, it was traumatic to think about something like that that could possibly even happen. Imagine what it's like now being a child. You go to school, which is supposed to be the safest place for you to go, and now you're having drills. If a person comes in with a AK-47 and starts to shoot, what are you supposed to do? And we're talking about very, very young children. And it's not just the ones that, again, are directly impacted, like at this particular school in Uvalde and others. It has an impact across the country with kids that are going to school, whether it's a private school, public school, parochial, it doesn't matter. It can impact anywhere. And I think the long-term mental health issues or implications of this is something we really, I don't think we're prepared to even deal with that.
At this point, you're entirely right. There are multiple generations of kids from elementary school on up, who are now, in some cases, adults who've grown up in this environment in which their schools are targets. Andy McCabe, Chief Charles Ramsey, Amber Walker, thank you for all of that. And we have a lot more on this breaking news story straight ahead. Alex Marquardt will pick up our coverage right after a quick break. Stay with us.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.